Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. Wanted to get into this article on Zero Hedge written by Lance Roberts. I want to give him all the credit he deserves. This is really an awesome article. And I know Michael Burry was talking about this on Twitter just the other day, this economic bullwhip effect. And, I think Burry just kind of blurted it out the other day, but what's great about the Zero Hedge article that Lance Roberts wrote is he really dives into what this is and how it's playing out right now with the U.S. economy. And I read this article this morning, and boy, it really, I mean, I was like, wow, that is something I need to think through. And so I think I'll do a whiteboard video on this tomorrow. So I wanted to kind of share the story with you and share my ideas so you guys can start thinking about it as well, because I think this is really what's going on behind the scenes when it comes to retail in the United States. And this can have a massive impact on the economy. And this could be why the yield curve is just screaming recession to the degree that it has been over the past few months. I mean, my sister, I haven't had time to look at the markets or anything today, but my sister texted me earlier today. She really stays on top of CNBC and all the kind of talking heads in the mainstream media. And she said, just reading the text here, the 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, and 7 year yields are higher than the 10 year right now. So it's not just the twos and tens that are inverted. It's the ones, the twos, the threes, the fives, and the sevens. That is not a healthy yield curve, to say the least. Holy cow. So let's get into this article. And I think this will shed some light on maybe why the yield curve is giving us these ominous warning signs. And this is what Lance Roberts, again, I want to give him full credit here. And I think Adam Taggart talked about this a few months ago. You got to check out his Wealthy On podcast. He's a buddy of mine. He's a fantastic interviewer, bright, super, super smart guy. And then, like I said, Michael Burry discussing this as well recently. So here we go. The bullwhip effect will frustrate the Fed. So the bullwhip effect has gotten some media attention lately. However, the market monetary policy cause effects consequences are not well discussed. Okay, historically, businesses have the propensity to overestimate strength and weakness. Okay, instead of reading this, I think let's just go to this chart. And there we go. Let's focus on this for a moment, because I can probably summarize this bullwhip effect pretty easily, even without a whiteboard. Let's assume that you're Macy's. And I just got done doing a live stream with my good buddy, Robert Kiyosaki, where he talked about going to Macy's. And there's actually a Macy's that's walking distance from his house in the area called the Biltmore. And he said he went over there this morning or yesterday when he was going to the gym. And he said, everything is on sale. And so we discussed this bullwhip effect. And basically, if you're an entrepreneur, you have been in the past, I think this will make a lot of sense. So you're Macy's, and let's just say during 2021, your demand goes through the roof. And you could say, yeah, George, it's declining because of Amazon and yada, yada, yada. Okay, but we're talking about demand relative to what it was in, let's say, 2020. So your demand through the roof. So you as a buyer or a retailer, you think that this demand is just going to exist indefinitely into the future. You don't understand macroeconomics. You really don't understand what the Fed's doing. You don't understand government deficit spending. You don't follow the Rebel Capitalist channel. You don't watch George Gammon whiteboard videos. So you just assume that, my gosh, this economy's booming. I'm listening to CNBC. I'm listening to Bloomberg. I'm listening to Jerome Powell, Janet Yellen, Joe Biden, all these people saying that the economy is booming. And I'm seeing it in my store sales. My goodness, we do have some inflation. So my margins are getting squeezed because I can't really raise prices yet. But my goodness, our stores are packed. The parking lots are overflowing. People are buying everything in sight. This is wonderful. This is amazing. My goodness, whatever the Fed is, they sure solved the problem of the economic decline that we had during the Cerveza sickness. My goodness. Bravo, Fed. Woo. Good job. Bravo, government spending. Just keep this up. My goodness. To infinity and beyond, like Buzz Lightyear. So what do? If they sold, let's say, 1,000 shirts, and that was extremely high demand, they order not just 1,000 shirts, but they order, let's say, 2,000 shirts, because they see demand increasing, and they say, I want to have enough. I mean, I don't want to run out of these shirts, because then that costs me sales. So they go to the wholesaler, and I don't know how a retail supply chain works. I'm just throwing these names out there as just so you understand the concept here. So they go to the wholesaler and say, my goodness, sales were incredible this quarter. It's amazing. It's like nothing I've ever seen. We've got this booming economy. Isn't it great? And the wholesaler says, yeah, how many shirts do you want to order? And the guy says, oh my gosh, we're going to order 2,000 shirts because we had demand for 1,000 last quarter, let's say. And we've got to assume that this demand is going to continue to increase. So the wholesaler says, wow, you want 2,000 shirts? Okay, well, we'll get them for you. So then the wholesaler goes to the manufacturer and he says, well, you know what? We're going to get even more demand in the future, probably from other customers. So instead of 2,000 shirts, we're actually going to order 2,500 shirts. We want to be prepared. We don't want to miss out on any sales to any of the other retailers that we deal with, or maybe even with this specific retailer. We want to make sure that we've got plenty in case they come to us next quarter and order even more than the 2,000 they just ordered for us. So then what does the manufacturer do? They go out there and they source all of their inputs, whether it's, let's say it's cotton and, well, it's going to be natural gas. It's going to be chemicals that are produced from petroleum products. So, but they're going in, they're sourcing all these materials and labor and all, you know, they hire an additional 400 people at the plant and all these things because they, like the wholesaler and like the retailer, think that this increase in demand is not only sustainable, but it's going to continue to increase. Because they're not connecting the dots. They're not saying to themselves, oh, this demand is temporary just because it's these stimmy checks full, flowing through the system. They think it's because the economy's booming and it's going to continue to boom. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts, Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out-of-control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. And I can relate. I can totally relate to this because, as you guys know, I retired in 2012, but prior to retiring as an entrepreneur, I knew nothing about macro. I didn't know what the Fed was. I didn't know what a yield curve was. I barely even knew what interest rates were. And so I would have done the exact same thing in my business. And so you can see where we're going with this. What happens is all of these decision makers throughout the supply chain are getting a signal from this demand that is wildly inaccurate, because I think Lance Roberts refers to it as a sugar rush. Once this sugar rush is out of the system, then the next quarter, let's say, does the retailer sell those 2,000 shirts? You guys know the answer to this. No. Do they even sell 1,000 shirts? No. Do they sell 500 shirts? Probably not. Maybe they sell 250 shirts. So what do you see as the average Joe and Jane or the average Robert Kiyosaki? Not that he's average by any stretch of the imagination, but you see a sale at Macy's or Target or Walmart or pick the retailer, right? But unfortunately, when the wholesaler calls up the retailer the next quarter and says, hey, are you, you going to place that order for 2,500? No. We're good to go. We didn't even sell the 2,000 that we ordered. We only sold 250. Yikes. So what does a wholesaler have to do with his staff? Oh my gosh. Well, I hired all these people to fill this demand from the retailers. Now we're not seeing, we got to fire it. And what happens with the manufacturer? Oh my gosh. We hired these 400 people and we sourced all of these commodities. So now we're not going to have to buy any more commodities for the next 6 months because we've got it all stockpiled and they're not placing the order for 2,500 or 3,000. They're placing the order for nothing because they've got an excess of inventory because of what they ordered the quarter before. And so then you see the layoffs and you see the unemployment go up. Then you see what? The price of commodities go down, which is exactly what we have seen. This is the bullwhip effect. And you can see it right here, as Lance points out. This is retail inventory sales ratio, general merchandise stores. So going back to 2009, this ratio, inventory to sales, was about 1.5. This would indicate they have, the higher the number here, the more inventory they have. And then in 2017, just in time supply chains or whatever, so they can hold less and less inventory, which is more efficient, increases margins. And then in 2020, we see the inventory plummet. Why? Because they weren't getting any and the demand stayed relatively consistent. So demand stays consistent. You have less inventory coming in. The amount of inventory relative to sales goes down. Then we see them order. Then we see stimmy checks come in and then inventory really gets wiped out. Then what we've seen over the past couple months the amount of inventory they have relative to sales absolutely skyrocket. So you've got two levers here. Either the sales stayed the same and the inventory increased wildly, or the inventory stayed the same and the sales plummeted, or a combination of both. And my guess is that it's probably a combination of both. So what's happening is the Fed actually is kind of making the same mistake. I think that's Lance's point. And let me get back to the article. So what caused the bullwhip effect? Well, this is a sugar rush that we are referring to. And he's got some more charts in here that are fantastic. I mean, I cannot suggest reading this article enough. But the Fed is actually making the mistakes that are made in the bullwhip effect through monetary policy. And I don't know if Lance goes into this, but my point is the Fed is seeing inflation, and they're not realizing that inflation could, I'm not saying it is, but it could be a result of the sugar rush. And as this sugar rush is coming down, meaning the demand is coming down, the economic activity is coming down, we're going into a recession, they are increasing rates because they think that this inflation, just like the retailer thought the demand, was not only sustainable, but going to increase indefinitely into the future. So just like the retailer exacerbates the problem by ordering not just 1,000 that they sold, but 2,000, the Fed exacerbates the problem by not just taking rates up to 150 basis points, but taking rates up to who knows where they end. Let's just hypothetically say 300 basis points, 3%. And this is another one of the reasons why I've been kind of in the, not the deflationary camp, I wouldn't go that far, but the disinflationary camp. And you guys know, I did a whiteboard video on this probably at least 3 or 4 months ago now, where I don't make a lot of predictions, but one of the predictions I made is in Q3 or Q4, regardless of where inflation was, I didn't know where it would be. But I thought that Q3, Q4, we'd start to see the inflation come down a bit as far as the headline CPI because of this sugar rush that Lance is referring to. And I didn't even think through the bullwhip effect. I was just asking myself, okay, what caused the inflation to begin with? And are we going to have more of that or less of that going into 2022? And at least on the demand side of the equation, the answer was we're going to have a hell of a lot less. Now, the supply side, you know, I think maybe we're consistent. Maybe we're getting a little bit better with the supply side as far as the supply chains. Maybe they're getting a little bit worse. I don't know. That's a debate for another video. But I thought that at least on the demand side, that what brought us, that the government interventions, the economic distortions that were created by the central planners that created the inflation dynamic on the demand side of the equation was not going to be there, or going to be there to a far lesser degree in the back end of 2022 and throughout 2022. And so if the variable, the metric that created the inflation, if you take that away, well, we're going to have some disinflation. And so it, just looking at the demand side of the equation. And I wasn't even thinking through. So this bullwhip effect, now that I've understand it, that just kind of reinforces my conviction level. I think that's the best way to say it. It reinforces, or maybe even increases, the conviction I have that we'll see some disinflation Q3, Q4. Maybe I'll be wrong. Who knows? Don't usually make predictions, but that's one I made and one I'm sticking to, especially as I see more and more evidence, the yield curve, the commodity prices crashing, the reading stories like this, and you know, gold price going down, copper going down, Dr. Copper. It all leads to one conclusion. I think my biggest hesitation, and I think the best argument for why we will not see disinflation, is because a lot of people are on that side of the boat. And usually when everyone is on one side of the boat, the opposite happens. So I think that's actually the best argument against my prediction coming to fruition. We'll have to see how it plays out. We're living in incredibly interesting global macroeconomic times. And I always say on the whiteboard videos that ignorance is bliss is a very bad investment strategy. And unfortunately, and you guys know this better than I do, your friends and family member Freds, the average Joes and Janes out there, that is their investment strategy, just the ostrich strategy, if you will. And so you as rebel capitalists, obviously you're taking proactive measures to make sure that you are understanding to the greatest of your ability the world around you. And I think that's going to yield dividends long term when we go through these potentially tumultuous economic times here. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. As always, make sure that you're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.